This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Millions of eyes were on the Motor City this past weekend as Detroit's Ford Field Stadium played host to WrestleMania, the World Series of Professional Wrestling. The event drew more than 80,000 people from 24 countries and all 50 states. The big match of the night featured proxies for Donald Trump and World Wrestling Entertainment President Vince McMahon. Trump's all-American good guy Bobby Lashley thumped McMahon's wild-haired, tattooed bad guy Umaga, and Trump shaved off McMahon's hair. WrestleMania is the event of the year in professional wrestling, but millions attend the shows that run the other 51 weekends of the year, and many millions more watch on TV. Why? Everybody knows the matches are scripted in advance. In fact, pro wrestling doesn't even call itself a sport. It is, however, big-time entertainment and big business. Later in the program, Senator John Kerry wins one for the Red Sox Nation and Yankee Nation, too. And the price may be right, but can you afford the taxes? But first, the world of wrestling. If you're a fan, call and tell us why. If you can't understand the attraction, we'd like to hear from you as well. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with wrestling legend Les Thatcher, a professional wrestler for 20 years. Les Thatcher is now a trainer and the host of an internet radio talk show called Wrestling Weekly. He joins us from member station WVXU in Cincinnati. Nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you, Neil, and it's a pleasure to be with you on Talk of the Nation.
Now, you've been involved, I guess, in every aspect of the business, from promoter to fighter to trainer. I guess things have really changed over the course of your career.
Yes, they have. I will be celebrating my 47th anniversary as far as my first match is concerned, July the 4th of this year, and I began in 1960. So, yes, the industry has evolved and evolved again during that 47 years. But, you know, the basics are still the same. It's and a lot of people are curious of what it is, and it's basically good versus evil. The premise of a good novel, the premise of a good drama movie. So, and of course, as you mentioned, WrestleMania this past weekend, 80,000 people over a $5 million gate. And I'm sure, but when the numbers come out, that probably their pay-per-view buy rate was probably a record as well. So it seems like, you know, as much as so many people talk down about the industry, it continues to flourish regardless.
Yeah, it does. It's sort of cyclical. It has its good years, and then for some goes fallow for a little while. But it's certainly the last 20 years have largely been very good.
Yes, that's true. Well, you know, and when it does cycle, a lot of that sometimes is to do with the characters losing their freshness or their appeal to the fans.
Now, when you were a fighter, were you a good guy or a bad guy?
I was a good guy for the majority. I told the producer to ask me on the show the other day. The only time that I was a bad guy, I was up in Eastern Canada in 1970. And if you were an American, no matter what your age, you were obviously a draft dodger if you were in Eastern Canada in 1970. So that was the one time for about 6 months period that I was a bad guy. But no, I was a good guy for most of my career.
Is it more fun to be a good guy or a bad guy?
Well, you know what? I most of the bad guys say that that's the fun of the business. You know, to me, actually, the excitement for me is to go into the ring and be able to manipulate the people. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but in a good way. You know, I was taught 47 years ago that when you go out there, that's your office. You're the boss. And when I want you to stand up, you're going to stand up. And when I want you to sit down, you're going to sit down. I want you to boo or cheer or whatever the case may be. And that's the art of our business. And I heard my friend Mick Foley say earlier about being an art of garbage. Whatever the case, it is not a business that is easily perfected.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mick Foley's going to be joining us a little bit later, but I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about the choreography, if you will, the scripting of the matches. I guess that hasn't changed either. The storylines are the same, and the choreography is still the same.
Yes, well, the storylines, there is more aerial, more what we call high-impact moves currently. Back in the 60s, I was considered a high flyer, doing drop kicks and flying head scissors, an occasional drop, what they call a missile drop kick off the top rope out of the corner. Today, I would be lukewarm in comparison to what a lot of the guys are doing currently. Now, as far as choreography, a lot of people talk about script, you know, use the word scripted.
Yeah.
Now, the ending of matches are predetermined. Now, and today, a lot of the television, a 3 or 4 minute match may be talked about in terms of what, where we're going from point A to point B and so forth and so on, simply because there's a gazillion cameras and the director wants to know where to pick up, you know, the excitement and the high points of the match. However, if you and I are to go out and do 25 minutes tonight live in an arena, we will probably know what the final 2 minutes of that 25 are. However, that first 23 will be mostly improv because you can't really determine what the audience is going to buy. I'm here in Cincinnati. If you were here, you and I were here in a match tonight, we might blow the roof off the building and go to Chicago tomorrow, and the people might sit on their hands. So we have to be able to shift gears out there on the fly.
Yeah, but
and create as we go.
If one fighter has a particular signature move, you certainly want to create the opportunity to see that.
Absolutely. But, you know, you really don't know where you're going with this match. A lot of times back in my day, I wrestled between 1960 and 1980. There were times because the inner workings of the business were kept under wraps, as it were. A lot of times you wouldn't even meet your opponent until you stepped in the ring with him.
Mm-hmm.
You knew what the ending was. You were going to win. He was going to win. But in terms of what transpired during that match was all created out there on the fly. That's why I think a lot of people don't understand what it takes to become a very, very good professional wrestler. And I think one of the good things about, you know, our behind the scenes being open to the public now is that once you do understand, you realize what talent it takes, you know, to perfect this business.
And just because you know how the match is going to end doesn't mean you can't get hurt in the meantime.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I've never used the word fake. Of course, we didn't back in the day, obviously. And today, somebody said, well, it's all fake. No, to me, fake implies that no one gets hurt. And obviously, that's not the case. And like as I say, in the last 10 years or so, a lot of the moves have become so high impact that it's not uncommon for guys to be out 6 months, a year. I could name you three fellows off the top of my head who have had neck surgery, serious neck surgery, and, well, Stone Cold Steve Austin, for one. Who was a tremendous performer and drew big for WWE for years, probably has seen his last match simply because even as young as he is, the business has taken its toll on his body over the years.
He was the guest referee, I guess, in that big matchup at WrestleMania this past weekend. Anyway, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Les Thatcher, a former professional wrestler, now a trainer and host of the internet talk show Wrestling Weekly. We'll begin with Bob. Bob's with us from Seattle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I've enjoyed wrestling since I was a kid, and, you know, I enjoy the storylines, the proverbial struggle of good versus evil, and just watching the action, you know, and enjoying the manipulation of the crowd, much like Les was discussing.
Mm-hmm. And you know at this point that the outcomes are predetermined, and that doesn't bother you.
No, it doesn't. You know, you go there to watch the action, and, yeah, it's... I think more so now, there's more attention paid to the storylines. And I think one thing I'd also like Les to discuss is, you know, the challenges a wrestler faces when he's on the road for, you know, a 2 or 3 month stint where, you know, wrestling, eating strange food, sleeping in a strange bed every night, and then doing the same thing night after night. You know, the lifestyle would have to take a toll on one. Mm-hmm. And I think it's admirable that someone can do that for many years.
Les Thatcher?
Yes, absolutely, Bob. And thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, the lifestyle of a professional wrestler is grueling. Back during my time, between 60 and 80, there were a lot of what we called territories, regional promotions. But still, you were on the road almost every night. We were wrestling 5, 6, sometimes 7 nights a week, and sometimes twice in a particular day. And, yes, it's living in motels, living out of a suitcase, eating in restaurants, and the family life takes, you know. You have to really, you know, a lot of young men will say, okay, I've got a great physique or I'm a great athlete. I'm going to get in professional wrestling. There's a lot of money there. And I'm going to become wealthy. Well, you know, the real artists in this business, the top guys in this business, are also usually fans and people who have a passion for this. I think Mick will tell you the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just do this as a day-to-day job. And, of course, today with WWE, not only are these guys traveling from state to state, they're crossing time barriers. They may be in Australia for a week and then end up back in the States to do a TV. They're home for a couple of days and then gone again and maybe end up in Mexico or Japan. So it is quite a toll, and you can age very fast.
Bob, thanks very much for the call. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Kurt, and Kurt's with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi, I just have a comment. I, like the last caller, I've been a wrestling fan for most of my life. I'm 33 now, and I think I kind of break the mold of what people might typically think of as a wrestling fan. I mean, I think of it, I was an English major in college, and I think of wrestling as sort of like, a little bit like Shakespeare was in his time, because, you know, he always threw something in his plays for the groundlings, you know, like the common folks, and then there was also sort of a higher level of thought that goes into it. And I think that some of the characters in wrestling really, you know, they touch some nerves with people and push, you know, pretty easily push hot buttons. But then there's also this level of reality that kind of goes over everything, where some of the wrestlers' real lives sometimes comes into their characters, and the constant threat of injury and the sort of graceful ballet that takes place in there. So, I mean, I appreciate it on another level than just the titillation and the, you know, the fake violence or the simulated violence of it.
I'd be willing to go along with soap opera, Kurt, but Shakespeare?
Hey, I see it that way, but I can understand most of my friends also disagree with me on this point.
All right. Well, there are certainly elements of, for example, even Grand Opera, the spectacle, Les Thatcher, that's a big part of it.
Yes, it absolutely is. You know, Kurt makes a point as well. A lot of people just pigeonhole wrestling fans as you have to be blue collar, you have to be this, you have to be that. Actually, there's quite a spectrum. Again, going back to my own career, what I call closet fans. I have sat on an airplane and with another traveler next to me, and finally they'll nudge me and say, "Excuse me, I recognize you. You're from that wrestling television show, whatever it happened to be." And yes, and this person might be a bank president, and they'll, of course, they'll quickly say, "Well, you know, I'm not a big fan, but my son watches."
Uh-huh.
And I say, "Well, that's good. You know, I'm glad he enjoys it." And then they'll say, "Oh, excuse me, but now when this guy did this to this guy, what?" And you know right away that they've done more than just a passing glance as they walk by the TV.
All right, Kurt, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more from Les Thatcher. Also, we'll be talking with Mick Foley when we come back from a break. Of course, Phil Nelson's Flying Leg Drops, Corkscrew Moonsaults. You guessed it, we're talking pro wrestling. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Pro wrestling is hardly just a match. It's a spectacle, and its fan base is growing. Our guest today is Les Thatcher, former professional wrestler and trainer. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, even if you just don't get it, you're invited to join the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Check out our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And now some of you might recognize this voice.
And I want to know one thing. How does that make you feel?
What do you think?
Well, the Lord doesn't matter how it makes you feel.
That's Mick Foley fooling around with The Rock. Foley's a pro wrestler with the World Wrestling Entertainment and author of The Hardcore Diaries. Mick Foley joins us now from his hotel in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to be here, but I have to disagree with something I heard. I think you can easily draw a parallel between what we do in WWE and Shakespeare, and I think people who study Shakespeare will be the first to admit that.
In what play in particular were you thinking of?
What is the I think the tragedies and the infidelities and treachery that go on would play into something like Macbeth, and certainly what we do is no bloodier at its worst than, what was the one that Shakespeare was panned for his last play, I think, which was Andronicus Rex.
Titus Andronicus.
Andronicus, that's it. But I think in the same way that Shakespeare was really hit or miss and gets a lot of credit for being the greatest scribe of all times, although he missed far often than he hit, draws a parallel with us because we miss once in a while too. But I think when we're on the money, we provide entertainment that's as good as anything out there.
Well, one of your, perhaps your best known moment, this is the, I think, the Hell in a Cell match against The Undertaker. That was when The Undertaker threw you from the top of a cage and sent you crashing to an announcer's table. This is something, you must see replays of this all the time.
Yeah, I do. And I remember a few days after it was over that it was said that no matter what I did before or would do since would no longer matter, because that was the only thing people would remember me for. And I thought it was foolish at the time, but now for the last 9 years, my life has been like the movie Groundhog's Day, where it's about the only thing. I guess I remember some other things too, but primarily that's the question I get far more often than others.
Was that move planned?
You know, it's funny is we did have a good idea that that was going to happen, but at least, you know, when I got up, and I guess I rolled off a hospital gurney and we climbed back up onto the cell, at least I thought I had the comfort of knowing that the worst of my day was over. And then the Undertaker, who was my opponent or partner, depending on how you want to look at it, choke slammed me on top of the cell, and the cell structure gave way, which was not planned. And that did far more damage to my face and it was the only time I'd ever been completely knocked unconscious in all my years in wrestling.
But nobody went and put padding on that table ahead of time.
No. And here's the ironic thing, that if we had been in a real sport like baseball or basketball or football, then clearly then when one of the participants is unconscious, then the show stops. And in doing what we do, which is hopefully entertaining a lot of people, you know, you have an end result that you're working toward, and you'll do whatever it takes to get to that end result, even if it means buying some time while one of the participants is unconscious.
Neil, may I give a compliment to my friend
Certainly.
Mick Foley? You know, I think Mick exemplifies that in our industry, you can be both sides of the coin, because he certainly, one side, portrayed the violence of professional wrestling. But let me give him tell you something you may not know. When Mick wrote his first novel, he did it longhand in 6 weeks on a legal pad, and it was over 300 pages. So he's obviously not just a dumb jock.
Well, at least I appreciate that. That was actually the first autobiography. That's right. All the books have been longhand. The current one as well, including the two novels. But I think I put, you know, a little longer than 6 weeks, like seven or eight into the novel. But everything I've ever done, which doesn't mean I didn't put a lot of time. I mean, there were hundreds of hours, and I was very proud of everything I've written, including the current one. But I think I have the distinction of, you know, representing both the most physical aspects of wrestling and also like the silliest, most innocent aspects of professional wrestling.
Silly, innocent aspects?
Oh, sure. Anyone who, I'm taking it that you don't watch a show very often. And I know we get labeled with a broad brush sometimes or painted with a broad brush, but certainly anyone who's watched the show will understand that a lot of the joy comes from silly, innocent things. Like, for example, Vince McMahon on this past Monday Night's Raw was doing anything within his power to prevent people from seeing that he'd had his head shaved bald at WrestleMania. And, I mean, I watch with my kids, and we had it on TiVo, and we rewound over and over as McMahon desperately tried to cover up his bald head with first a crown and then a cowboy hat and then the ring announcer's skirt. And it was funny, and it was innocent, and it will be overlooked by critics who want to look at some of the things we do that are not so innocent.
All right, let's see if we get another listener on the line. This is Michael. Michael calling us from Savannah in Georgia.
Hey, how are you doing, Neil?
Okay.
Just had a quick question or comment about it being called professional wrestling.
Okay.
I mean, if it's somewhat scripted and the endings are predetermined, why is it called professional wrestling? I mean, professional basketball players...
Presumably because they get paid for it.
Yeah. Do you have an alternate you'd like it to be referred to as?
I mean,
it's working for like 70 or 80 years, so we're going to keep it, I think.
Well, no, and I don't mean any disrespect by it. I just, you know, comparing, you're not a professional wrestler.
Well, they do call it entertainment, and they don't call it a sport.
I don't think we're hiding that. I mean, if you had something, it's called World Wrestling Entertainment, but I think around the world what we do is, well, sometimes referred to as catch and Germany or Austria, sometimes referred to as Lucha Libre, Pro Wrestling in Japan, but I think it's universally regarded as being a form of wrestling.
So would you consider yourself a professional athlete?
You know what? Other professional athletes do consider us professional athletes. So at that point, it doesn't matter what I think, but when people who've won gold medals in Olympic competition and when people who've won Super Bowls and who have won World Series refer to us as great athletes, I'll take their word for it.
Okay.
May I interject something here?
Go ahead, Les.
As a trainer.
And thanks for the call, Michael.
Having been a trainer since 1993, I have worked with top-flight athletes from other sports. And everybody cannot do what we do. A very quick example, a few years ago, I had a young man who was three varsity letters in SEC soccer. And he'd been a wrestling fan all his life, and he graduated from an SEC university and came to me to be trained as a wrestler. He walked away after 2 months. He was frustrated because he could not do this. I've worked with professional football players, former baseball players. Being a great athlete does not mean you'd be a great wrestler, but I think, as Mick will agree, it takes a combination of theatrics, athleticism, and a passion for this business. I had mentioned earlier, Mick, that most of us who have actually hung in this business over the years started as fans and had such a tremendous passion for it, and it takes that also to excel.
Sure, and I'll be the first to admit I was not a great natural athlete or even a good natural athlete, but there are some things such as timing and hand-eye coordination and body control when it comes to taking care of your opponent and allowing them to trust you literally with their lives that do represent athletics at its best.
And also, as we heard, stamina is certainly a
factor. Yeah, and I mean, I was just at batting practice with the Detroit Tigers, and I knew a couple of the guys previously, but a couple of guys, Pudge Rodriguez, for example, who's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, came over. He says, "I'm a huge fan. I have so much respect for what you do." And I don't think I could possibly go through a 162-game season paying full attention at all times, especially squatting behind the plate. And I said, how do you do that? And so there are different talents and different degrees of physical, I guess, dexterity that some athletes have that others cannot have. And I think it's great that people appreciate talents that they don't necessarily have.
Here's an email question from Benjamin in Tucson. How much control do wrestlers have over their story? Les Thatcher, does a wrestler get to decide what kind of a character he is, or is that decided by promoters?
Well, I think years ago you had more control over your character. There's always been someone back in the day, they were called a booker. Today, there are writers, a group of writers, creative, but someone puts it together. But again, it has to really make it flow, to make it work, to draw the people in. It has to fit your personality. Mick as Cactus Jack or Mankind or Dude Love or whatever character he threw, or as Mick Foley, has to take his personality and multiply it by 10 to make it feasible, to make it work. You have to, there's something intangible that if I'm trying to do a wrestling promo to draw you in, Neil, and I'm trying to be someone that I actually am not, or it's 360 degrees away from my personality, you know, something's not going to click positive in your subconscious, so we're not going to do business with it. So everything has to sort of fit into something that you, as the performer, are comfortable with.
Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Michelle. Michelle's with us from Arizona.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share some observations that I've made about professional wrestling and the effect that it has on people. Unfortunately, I was with a man for several years who was a big fan of professional wrestling.
That was your first mistake, is staying with him.
Yeah, he was a real good catch. He liked the fishing shows as well.
Okay.
But he's long gone, thank goodness. But two observations I have. One is that he really convinced himself that it was real, and being a choreographer myself, it took me about 2 minutes to recognize. Unfortunately, I was forced to watch some wrestling because we only had one television.
Right.
That it was fake. So he convinced me to go to a live match with him where he continued to believe that it was real.
How old was he?
He was in his 30s.
Well, both of you are wrong, because it's neither completely real or fake, as you would say.
Well, his contention was that it was not choreographed and there were not hand signals or tells.
Well, there's probably a minimum. You know, if we were in Ford Field a few days ago, out of the 80,000 there, I'm sure there's a handful of people who believe everything they saw was real, which is probably the same percentage of people who thought that Dr. Evil was really trying to destroy the world.
Yeah, and most of them are probably 11 years old.
Well, probably not. I mean, I guess there are adults who just don't catch on for whatever reason.
Well, I think it was just his idea that he really wanted to hold on to the idea that it was.
Well, I still
don't know if
hold on to Santa Claus and there
himself it was actually real, but he really wanted to believe that it was.
Well,
so that's
don't you think
my first point?
Okay,
go ahead.
My second point is even more important, and that's really what I want to get to.
Go ahead.
Well, during this live wrestling match that I went to, we were up in the stands. It was in a big arena,
right?
And we were sitting there, and in front of us, here comes a man with two young children. I believe the impression I got was that he was divorced, and this was his weekend with his two kids, one of which was about three, a boy, and then he had a girl who was about four, maybe 5 years old.
Okay.
And when they came in, they were very well-behaved children, very nice, very courteous. The little girl was very shy. And by the end of the match, well, I was very interested in the behavior of these children because I watched their personalities completely change from being nice, you know, very comfortable, courteous, almost shy children, to the end of the match when they were angry, hostile, violent, and yelling in earnest with hatred in their voice. Every single swear word that they had heard every adult, including their own father, who was behaving abhorrently as an example, in my view.
Right.
And these children were taught in front of my eyes by the guise of professional wrestling and their so-called Shakespeare, which, excuse me, is nothing but laughable and perverse. Let me finish my point.
Okay.
These children were shown the show.
Right.
And they were taught right in front of my eyes that the way to solve their problems in life was with yelling and anger and physical violence.
Well,
and those kids in that arena, I'm not finished.
Let's let Mick Foley have a chance. Go ahead, Mick.
You know, first of all, a parent shouldn't be bringing a 3- and a 4-year-old. And certainly if I have a 4- and a 6-year-old and a 13- or 15-year-old, and none of my kids use that type of language. It's not permissible, whether that are wrestling matches or not. And we can't really control what a parent allows their children to do. But usually, if a parent or a child is going to yell, it's seen as good-natured fun. And in so many cases, people go to the arenas, they let off a little steam, and it makes them more likely to be able to deal with the pressures of the outside world. I don't know what it is you saw. Obviously, there's examples to every rule. But Les has been around this stuff for over 40 years. I've been around it for 22, and I look out and I see a lot of positive bonding, and there is an intergenerational bond that exists that's really inexplicable, but it's there and it's existed for generations between grandparents and children. In my own case,
and
going through a difficult. Not childhood, but my difficult teenage years. It was something I really enjoyed doing with my dad. She had a bad experience, but I do not think that's representative of the way children or parents act at our matches.
We're talking with Mick Foley and Les Thatcher about professional wrestling. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to ask you both, some people have a hard time, you know, that scripted element of it. Professional boxing has been in a rapid and persistent decline of popularity for many, many years now. Professional wrestling has been on the opposite arc, it almost seems. One is thriving and one is not. If somebody learned that a match was fixed or the outcome was predetermined in boxing, there would be a scandal. Obviously, it's part of the script in professional wrestling. Why do you think, Les Thatcher, you've seen those particular that phenomenon?
Well, you know, I think in our business that the business evolves and changes with the times a lot. The characters, you know, back when I first started watching wrestling, I was about 8 years old in 1949 on a little 10-inch black and white screen. And I became fascinated by it. But, of course, this was not too many years after the end of World War II. And the bad guys then were Germans and the Japanese wrestlers. So, again, as Mick had pointed out earlier, it's a way of venting your frustrations. And, you know, I think that's one of the things, because I come from the era of the dark, smoke-filled arenas, but a lot of people in those dark arenas would vent and get rid of their frustrations. Simply, you know, that was better than going home and taking it out on their spouse or on their children, honestly. But as you see these characters evolve, it's like today, John Cena has the cut-off jeans. He started out as a rapper, but he's the kind of young man, clean-cut, who the young girls and the mothers look to, you know, as a role model to a certain degree. So our business, or the characters, at least in our business, evolve. And as I had mentioned earlier, at one point I was considered a high flyer. Today I wouldn't even be close. So the moves have become more high impact. So the fans, are it's whatever's going on in that particular generation. I think that's helped the business stay alive.
We're talking with Les Thatcher and Mick Foley about professional wrestling. When we come back from a short break, we'll take a couple more calls. We're also going to talk with Senator John Kerry, who won a big one for baseball fans across the country earlier this week. And we'll talk with a contestant on The Price is Right about the taxing problems of success. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're finishing up our bout on pro wrestling. We're talking with Les Thatcher, a former professional wrestler and trainer, as well as the great Mick Foley, a pro wrestler with the World Wrestling Entertainment and author of the Hardcore Diaries. And let's read this email we got from Ed in Kansas City. I've been watching wrestling since the 1960s. I used to cut dates short on Saturday night so I could be home at midnight to watch wrestling on WOR-TV in New York, the only hour that was on at the time. These men are magnificent athletes and excellent performers. What I enjoyed above all was the hype. Captain Lou Albano, Bono, classy Freddie Blassie, the Grand Wizard, and luscious Johnny Valentine were articulate, fast talkers, original, and very funny as well. And boy, could they promote a match. And I'm glad, he adds, that Vince McMahon got his head shaved.
I'm glad we finally got a listener who actually likes what we do.
Oh, we had some couple of callers on earlier.
Not when I was on. I thought I was going to have to be defensive the whole time.
Yeah. Patrick in Denver emails, the life of a wrestler is very dangerous. Severe, unexpected injuries happen with surprising regularity. With this in mind, what kind of health care is offered to the wrestlers, Mick?
Well, it used to be that no health care was offered. And I was just talking with the Detroit Tigers trainer about the fact that until 94, we would have no trainers on the road either. Now there's at least one full-time trainer and a doctor and a trainer at least the television shows, because that's all I've been on over the course of the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And any injury we suffer in the ring is taken care of. I mean, I wish there was a union and things like that that would completely look after guys, but until that happens, we have to kind of take responsibility for our own futures. But as far as injuries go, we are pretty well provided for.
Let's get Sam on the line. Sam with us from Aurora, Oregon.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, Neil. Good show.
Thanks.
And let me be the first to say, Foley is God.
Yeah, you know, I became, you know, as you probably know by listening, you know, these signs kept popping up, and I was like, oh, I've got enough problems without being accused of blasphemy, which is where the title for the book Foley is Good came from. So fans used to put that one extra O in there. So that would be a lot more accurate. Foley is, you know, fairly good, at least these days.
Okay, right on.
Is Foley at least sometimes a good guy?
Well, always.
Ah.
I love that guy. I read the first time I ever read a book more than 300 pages was his.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. And if you don't mind me shamelessly promoting my book, and Les would expect nothing.
Nothing less. I sure would.
I'm flattered because I haven't written a book dealing with wrestling since 2001. I didn't know if there would still be an audience for it. And I'm proud to say that it's currently number 8 on the New York Times list and has actually been on the list for 4 weeks. So from a guy who went into the world of fiction and found out that the audience wasn't dying to read sensitive yet violent coming-of-age stories. Thank you to anyone who happened to pick up a copy of the Hardcore Diaries.
Sam, thanks very much for the call.
Well, I'd like to know what kind of state Mick Foley's body is in at this point after all those youth speaking of violence.
I believe it's in the state of Pennsylvania.
I'm probably doing better than people think, although I did have a real bad back episode that resulted not only in a real bad herniation of the disc, which pressed on the nerve, but then I also got something in the mail from the emergency room, said you might want to check out the two fractured vertebrae.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I knew from the moment I stepped in the ring, especially when I decided to take a real physical approach to it, that there would be a price to be paid for it. And some nights, when the weather's cold, it seems like a pretty extreme price. But I've never once felt sorry for myself, and I think bad knees and aching back are a small price to pay for not only living out my dreams, but for apparently, putting a smile on a lot of faces.
Sam, thanks very much.
I hate to keep complimenting my friend Mick Foley. I'd love to
go ahead,
if I could. But truthfully, Neil, Mick is the kind of performer that a few years ago, he was in for a couple shows for me, and before anything, he came to me and he said, I don't know how well I'll be able to perform tonight, but he went out there and tore the house down. And if he's in really bad shape, that's part of the reason, because he feels that he owes the fans something and they paid their buck, and he's going out there and give them everything he can.
I guess I have been speaking in defense of wrestling and WWE, but I think when guys come up and they learn that the fans come first no matter what, you do develop this work ethic that says, in our business, if your car breaks down, you leave it on the side of the road, you put your thumb out, and you find a way to get to that show. And when you get to that show, no matter what state your body is in, you put on the best show that you're capable of doing. And the odd thing is, a lot of times the faking comes in when you actually pretend to be feeling a lot better than you are. I know there have been cities like, not that there's anything wrong with El Paso, but it sticks out in my mind as being a place that I was really hurting and thought, I would rather be anywhere than here right now. But those people paid their money, and when that bell rings and when my music plays, then they can't see a guy who's feeling down because he's away from his family and his knees are shot. I mean, they paid to see a guy entertained. So you put aside, your personal feelings and your physical ailments, and you go out there and you try to give people their money's worth. And
Mick Foley, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
And
good luck to you.
On.
Okay, Mick Foley of World Wrestling Entertainment, author of The Hardcore Diaries, with us from a hotel in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And Les Thatcher, thank you for your time.
Neil, thank you very much. It's been an honor to be on your show.
Les Thatcher, co-author of the Professional Wrestler's Instruction and Workout Guide, with us today from member station WXVU in Cincinnati. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Senator Kerry about a win for Red Sox Nation.